George Bush was twice elected president of the United States, serving between 2000 and 2008. Bush's administration bore a lack of interest in civil rights or anti-racism, characteristic of the neoconservative movement which produced him. However, the Bush administration Department of Justice conducted an investigation into a case so egregious it became the only instance of federal intervention in a racial discrimination case for his entire presidency. The case? Investigating systemic racism at Cracker Barrel restaurants.
I mean, a little on the nose.
Everybody, this is Busted Business Bureau. I'm Christian Borky. Thanks for tuning in. If you like this podcast, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts and tell your besties. My Instagram is Busted Biz Bureau, as is my Patreon, where I can constantly disappoint my Patreon subscribers. See you there. Today's guests are some of the most brilliant comedians in Chicago, two of the three hosts of the Beyond Bars podcast, and two sick, twisted human beings. It is Catherine Gongware and Kyrie DeComic. Hello.
Twisted right up. Woo-woo. Twisted right up. Our headphones were twisted on the way in. They just knew. They knew your intro. Here we are.
The best intro I've ever
heard. About to be a problem.
This episode came about when I was touring in December. I was actually touring with Christian McCann right over there.
Christian.
Christian times two.
So we were, you know, driving and doing the only pastime you do on tour, which is pointing at billboards and saying funny things about billboards. And so, you know, the like 8,000th Cracker Barrel we passed, Christian's like, isn't Cracker Barrel like super like problematic or something? I was like, what are you talking about? Immediately Google, Google, Google. And I'm like, all right, great. An episode locked and loaded, ready to go. So I guess I should be a good host and ask, have you guys ever been to a Cracker Barrel before? What do you guys?
You know I have.
Yeah.
You know I have.
Yeah, my family's from the South.
Yep, mine too.
When you were raised, they make sure that, like, even though I'm from the North, they make sure that I understand racism. So it's like a coming of age. You come to Cracker Barrel, you let people stare at you while you order. You try not to order chicken. It's a thing.
Yeah, I we used to drive from Virginia to North Carolina for my family vacations, and we certainly stopped at a Cracker Barrel or two in our time. And I will tell you, it's before the time where I would have understood cracker as even a problem. So I'll go ahead and out myself here. But, you know, we grow and we grow, or we don't.
Did you guys like the food?
I don't. I like, it's weird because I don't recall, like, it's hard to remember too many bad meals, you know what
recall.
I mean? But I remember being bad, like, not the, like, I remember going there and of all places to stop through, like, there's not that many to stop, but it wasn't like a regular thing, and it would have been, right, because they were so frequent on the highway, like, it should have been better.
Yeah, and I think a place of racism probably isn't a place of seasoning. Like, it's just, I just got an inkling, if you will. And I
have low blood pressure, so I need salt. It's going to be a problem for me.
Really,
you don't want to kill Catherine.
I'm an anti-racist because I need more salt in my diet.
That's actually how it started. No more white men, specifically
for that. Way more herbs of the people that I hated in this establishment.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think we went there for the vibes. Nothing brings your family together more like racism. You know what I mean? Because it's like, yo, this is why we got to stick together. Yeah, that's why, like, you know, it's tough for me to hate the food at Cracker Barrel because it's like I still like the freedom in America. So it's like,
do we think white people were in the kitchen though? So this is probably how this came about, right?
Wow, the way you've just foreshadowed.
Excellent.
So the answer is no. But
see, oh no.
So what's the story of
pants? Okay, no.
What's the story of Cracker Barrel becoming so ubiquitous, especially on highways, as you pointed out, on the drive, they're everywhere. The founder of Cracker Barrel is a man named Danny Wood Evans. He was born in 1935 and he died in 2012. What, are you laughing at Wood?
Danny Wood Evans is just three white names in a row. So crazy.
On a 1 of 10, I'm feeling an 11 on that one. It's like Danny had no option but to be racist.
He's actually black. I'm joking. I'm totally fucking with you.
I wish I had our faces. I wish that were real.
Let me talk to Danny Mama. That's some bullshit.
Danny Wood.
So, born in 1935, died in 2012. Let's read the opening line from his obituary in the New York Times, shall we? It's pretty devastating. Danny Evans, who created Cracker Barrel Old Country Store, a restaurant heavy on grits and nostalgia, expanded it into a $2 billion chain, then fought a losing battle to discriminate against gays, died on Saturday in Lebanon, Tennessee at 76.
I mean, 10 points to Gryffindor for whoever wrote that.
Yeah, that was
discrimination.
Did they say a losing battle?
Put it right, name it. That's excellent. That's a level of petty I aspire to be.
Yeah, I do kind of like that. Yeah. I like that, like, your last words involved.
Yeah, we could use a lot more people like that today that are going to call it like it is. Yeah,
a losing
say
battle.
It.
Oh, you suck.
A losing
suck.
Battle with the gays.
Was that the New York Times you said?
Yeah.
Holy shit. You lost in front of so many people forever.
Battle with the gays. Wow, excellent.
Kind of like Anita Bryant. Many people have continued the long tradition of losing battles against gays. So anyways, Danny Wood Evans is the humble son of an oil baron, and he was struck with the idea of opening a restaurant off of interstate exits because he worked in the oil and gas industry, right? He's on the road all the time. He's been to many a gas station. I assume eaten many gas station sushi by 1969. Hmm. And so this is kind of laid out in the official Cracker Barrel, like, history on their stupid little website and their, quote, historical documents. But I think it's, like, pretty easy to see where he got the idea of creating a home-style restaurant off the interstate.
Yeah.
When you're out alone on the road, you're a trucker.
It's appealing.
Or you're, yeah. It's appealing to have somewhere, like, comfortable to go. Like, you ever, truly, have you ever eaten at a gas station? I assume you guys have both been on tour enough to know how devastating it can be out there.
I ate dinner from a gas station last night, actually. On the way back from Black Factory. Like, I didn't have another option, and I still ate string cheese from the gas station.
One time, Christian and I stopped at a Mediterranean place, and a woman coughed into his pita so hard he was sick for, like, the next week.
Oh, you ate it after they coughed in the pita?
What are you going to do?
What do you mean? When you don't eat the pita, what do you... You ask for another pita?
He's just trying. I mean, all you can do is
shrug.
That's
the seasoning that people don't want when they go to Cracker Barrel. Like, there's no way I'm letting... I'm not letting those foreign germs...
That is impressive. That's a commit to the bit to eat it after the cough.
Sound like
that's
a fucking crazy. Ally to me is what it sounds like. Because I would have got really different. Ma'am, I need you to take that off of the plate. I can't eat
Are
that.
You Southern too, Christian? That's some Southern manners.
No, that, just, he, no. Buffalo, New York.
Oh, really? Not even that Midwest manners. Just hungry.
Just hungry.
Just hungry.
Hungry for change.
Yes, have eaten many at a gas station.
Like, fuck that. Fuck Eagle Rights. Eat my germs. Let me know you really... think of me
it's
as
so
a
bad at a gas station because even when I was doing this last night, like, I pumped the gas and then I wanted to eat the string cheese
gas.
Yeah, and I had to do it quick because there was, like, someone there late. I was like, I should not be
at
this gas station at 11:55, but anyway, I wanted to eat the string cheese immediately, and I was like, just touching this fucking gas pump is so bad, you're gonna get sick immediately. Yeah. If not sooner. So mm-hmm. Cracker Barrel, here we come.
Yeah, so in 1969 he borrowed a humble $40,000 from his family, the equivalent of $350,000 today.
Wow.
And then somehow he immediately started profiting off Cracker Barrel. It really boggles the mind. Business strategists are still mystified how this is possible, but credit where credit is due. I guess this is just like the last episode of my podcast, which you guys are not on, so I guess this is just for listeners. The man knows what the people want. All Cracker Barrel stores, per the company blog, must come equipped with the following. A deer head, traditionally positioned above the dining room fireplace.
Naturally.
Has to be real. No fabrications allowed. Horseshoes, but it is spelled wrong on their website, so it says horse hose. hung
Better
above
placed.
All door exteriors, bestowing good luck upon everyone who enters. A cook stove, an ox yoke, and a traffic light, always placed above the vestibule to light the way to the restrooms.
Mm. I'd like to spend a bit of time on horse hose, because I think that's Kyrie's Snapchat group. I think that's the top of the list.
It is, actually. I want to go there now. I always want to go with a hose.
Horse hose.
And the fact that they
the ones
have
that
horse
ride.
Hose, like, you know how rare it is to catch a hoe that's a horse, too? I'm sure it's like a mystical sex worker.
It's a unicorn. It's a unicorn
it is
situation.
A Sagittarius that is just out here living their life.
Okay, so I assume...
Half hoe, half man.
I always do this. I create the distraction, and then I'm like, get back to the story.
I'm so sorry. I'm just envisioning people getting hand jobs from centaurs now. Oh, my brain! That explains why they were so successful. The most mystical glory holes known to humankind.
Shut the
fuck. I'm thinking of you doing furry stuff with all the little My Little Pony girls. That's what I'm thinking of.
My Little Pony. My
like a mutual color. You know, Kyrie's got a
King Flay at the Cracker Barrel.
I'll follow you. You want to walk down path? I'll climb behind.
I thought I had something funnier from the company blog after that, but I feel like something else. But I'm going to.
No, let's go.
Read on anyway. The blog was fascinating, dare I say. It's obviously romantic about Cracker Barrels, but it's clear to see why they've become so popular. A quote from the company blog. Excuse me, I'm choking my THC beverage. One of the things we're known for is our brown paper menus. Back in the day, Dan Evans actually created the menus himself. The original handwritten menu was shaped like a barrel and offered country cooking staples such as eggs, A-I-G-S, sausage, bacon, ham, pancakes, grits, biscuits for breakfast, it is spelled wrong. For lunch and dinner, we offered beans and cornbread, turnip greens, country hams, and a few special sandwiches.
Sandwiches?
But, yeah. I think eggs is my favorite one.
Eggs is good.
A-I-G-S
is breakfast like breakfast, like brakes on a truck? Like, is this a whole
just B-R-A-K fast, breakfast.
Oh, okay, so just wrong. That's fine, too.
But my favorite neighborhood spot, Early Morning Delight, also had misspelled menus for, like, the first year that I would go to it. Even the name of the fucking restaurant was wrong, and I loved it.
Give the people what they want, like you said.
You can't have it all. You can't be spelling good and seasoning food well. You got to pick your battle. Yeah.
You know what he could have done, too, with the amount of that money is he could have done a marketing poll to see how most people in the South along those routes spelled eggs and breakfast. He might have just gone with a common denominator.
Or it could be like a plot twist and the eggs are vegan. And that's why they save so much money. Because they weren't paying $12.
No, he's in a
fight
with the gays, Kyrie. The eggs weren't vegan. Okay.
I do love.
That's a good point.
I was in line at Walgreens once and there was this woman in front of me who was on the phone telling the story so loudly. And she was like, I was at Whole Foods or whatever. And I got this chicken and chicken was spelled wrong. So I assumed it was vegan chicken. And so I put it in the oven. I ate the whole thing to get so fucking sick because it was just regular chicken and I'm an idiot.
I'm sorry. That's so stupid. That was really dumb. The bone, all of this shit, just the flesh.
I think it was wings too or something. So it's like, yeah, you ate the
you
bone.
You thought it was a vegan bone.
Telling the whole Walgreens line about her poop.
What is that? Like, I do want natural selection to happen faster. Thanos was right. What the fuck?
So get your eggs and breakfast.
And vegan real chicken.
And vegan chicken.
What you gonna do with these vegan bones, you fucking moron?
So, Cracker Barrel is very appealing to a lot of people for its homey feel, locally sourced ingredients, etc. That's Cracker Barrel's start. A guy works in the oil industry. He happens to have a rich family. He identifies a male loneliness epidemic on the American highway.
Oh.
He invents a kick-ass restaurant. So what's it like to work at Cracker Barrel? I will tell you about it in a positive way to start. So first off, when you apply for a job, you take a survey at intake for about what positions you'd be interested in working in at Cracker Barrel. Mm. So they're all about cross-training employees to make sure everybody knows the restaurant and could possibly be flexible. Right. A host working as a server for a night, a line cook stepping in for the dishwasher, etc.
Dishwasher as a milkmaid.
Oh, shit.
This actually gets, they only hired sexy dishwashers so that they would also be milkmaids. On this survey,
like
you can
Hooters,
list-
but in like Amish style?
Your little apron, your little milk cow milk. Okay.
Half naked churning butter.
So on the survey, you can list what you're most interested in working, and then you'd theoretically be assigned accordingly. Secondly, unlike many service industry jobs I've found, it is possible to get a raise while you're working at Cracker Barrel. At least in the 90s, you could get a raise by passing the company's internal tests, the program for which is titled Personal Achievement Responsibility. Employees at Cracker Barrel start at PAR 0, P-A-R-0, and they can become up to a PAR 4, earning raises along the way. It's not a promotion, it's just a way for you to prove your competence at the job and get rewarded for it monetarily. It kind of, to me, I don't know if you guys watch Severance, but it sounds like the Finger Traps in Severance. That's just for me. You get a waffle party if you come apart for it.
How do I keep people telling me to watch Severance?
Yeah, I know. I'm
whatever.
Too.
It's on Apple,
whatever.
Right? Apple TV, right?
I know. Yeah, it's Apple TV. or 1, 2, 3 movies. Anyways, you can be, you can move up from a par zero by passing written tests, oral evaluations, or working specific times. Again, moving up par levels, it does not mean you're promoted. It just means you get to make more money. In my experience, there are very few restaurant jobs where there's like a sincere merit-based way to like make more money towards upward mobility. So many people find this to be a positive and unique aspect at working at Cracker Barrel. Okay, that's enough background before we get into the meat of this. We're still not even at the fucking meat of the episode. We're talking about
vegan chicken.
Half-naked milkmaids and, yeah.
Fuck, it sounds so cool when we describe it. It's not so cool when you read
right,
about
so
it.
So HR starts out intentional.
Yeah. Have either one of you worked in the restaurant industry?
Yes.
I serve people.
She not service people. Okay.
Same. Tomato.
Eggs and eggs.
Breakfast and breakfast.
I mean, if you've never worked in the service industry, basically every day is a civil rights violation in one way or another.
Yes.
But we're going to talk about two particular sections of the Civil Rights Act today, which are at least as of time of recording, still tenuously federal law. We'll start off with Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which I will read for your listening pleasure on the podcast. So, employer practices, this is Section A. It is unlawful employment practice for an employer to fail or refuse to hire or discharge any individual or otherwise to discriminate against any individual with respect to his compensation, terms, conditions, or privileges of employment because of such individual's race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. There's more, but that's as much as I'm going to read. So let's say you're one person and you think you've been denied by a Cracker Barrel hosting job because you're black. How do you prove it? Obviously, that's just a long-standing question for the legal system, and I don't have an answer. Just kind of a brain teaser for you. Let's say, though, that it becomes well-established, if informally, that Cracker Barrel management doesn't hire black people for front-of-house positions. Servers, hosts, whatever. How can you legally prove that? It's certainly an uphill battle for sure. And in 1998, let's, I guess, set the stakes here, the average size of the workforce at Cracker Barrel in 1998 was 39,305 employees. But there were over 74,000 terminations and 80,000 hires and rehires. The average hourly employee worked for only 17 weeks at Cracker Barrel in 1998. The same year, dishwashers specifically had a turnover rate of 266%.
Damn.
So for every dishwasher, they would get fired, hired again, fired, and then another person would get hired. Like, that's what 266% means. The jobs of server, prep cook, host, and grill cook had an average turnover rates ranging from 179% to 192% in 1998 alone. I'm getting this information from the case text of Rhodes v. Cracker Barrel Old Country Store, linked in the description, by the way. So, a lot of people are coming in and out. Why aren't they lasting very long? Who is coming in and out? All of this is leading up to what I just mentioned, Rhodes v. Cracker Barrel. So there's very little news coverage that I can find, so forgive if the dates are a little off. But Rhodes v. Cracker Barrel is a, I believe, 2002 case trying to establish a class action lawsuit of black employees who feel that Cracker Barrel consistently violated Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, at least between 1993 and 1999. I know you both don't care about the dates, because why would you? We're just on an entertainment podcast, but I care. So I'm not sure like when it was filed, because there's not a lot of news coverage about this. What are the kinds of things being alleged here? Let's talk about it. One, the aforementioned PAR tests were allegedly randomly given to black employees, whereas white employees were informed ahead of time of when they would be.
What's a PAR test? What's that?
PAR 4.
That's the FedEx system?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it would result in seemingly merit-based payment discrepancies that were rotten from the start, right? If black employees aren't told when the test is, and the test is confusing, or you can't study for it because you're forbidden for studying from it at home. So building on that.
Or if you're in the service industry, you're hungover.
Every single day is a
every
mental
other day,
war.
Yeah.
Mental war, holy shit.
White employees were given preferential scheduling treatment. For example, when one particular white employee asked for Thursdays off, she was given Thursdays off. When a black employee at the same store asked for a specific day off, he was denied. Black people would apply to certain front-of-house positions and be told Cracker Barrel isn't hiring, only for a few days later to have new white people working in those same positions.
This is triggering.
One plaintiff alleged that white people were allowed to use the store manager's office phone to make phone calls, but black employees had to use the pay phone in the break room.
Jesus Christ.
On the aforementioned intake survey, black people would express interest in hosting or serving, only to be offered a job in the back of house, dishwashing, or cooking. So, That's a sort of, so let me, I guess, do a mental check-in. How are we both feeling so far? Does this sound familiar? You said this sounds familiar or triggering.
Yeah.
So it sounds
nostalgic.
Like.
Nostalgic. Nostalgic is the word. Yeah. That's the theme. It's the mission.
Mm-hmm. Nostalgic for a different time in American history and for a different time in what, your life?
Like, I don't know. It feels very current shit. It feels like this current administration. I don't, never mind.
Yeah, oh, no, we'll get there. From every service industry job I've worked, none of this is surprising to me personally at all.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of industry, I mean, even in Chicago, still a lot of industry, like dress codes, and they're designed to keep black people out. Even like black-owned businesses sometimes like struggle with that, I have seen.
100%.
Yeah, so this is just some, I'm not even reading like half of what's being alleged in this like full document or whatever. So there's a bunch more from the case text that I'm not mentioning because we'd be here all day. No, I'm going to hone in on that last one about the intake survey. For eagle-eared listeners, they might have put the pieces together that if Cracker Barrel is retaining these intake surveys, there might be a mathematical argument which states that black people are routinely denied from the jobs that they're applying for in an objectively disproportionate rate than white people, mm-hmm. right? So if a bunch of black people are saying, I want to work as the front of house, they get assigned dishwasher, and there's not that same like mathematical correlation for white people, you might be able to objectively prove that in a court of law.
Right.
Does that make sense? So I want to go on a tangent for a second. I want to tell you guys about a book that I think you guys should do on your podcast. It's called Math on Trial, How Numbers Are Used and Abused in the Courtroom by Layla Schneps. I have the link in the description. You can actually read the whole thing online for free as a PDF. In the book, she'll explain, like, chapter by chapter, a mathematical principle or a theorem or axiom or whatever gay shit, and give a concrete she'll give a concrete case in a court of law about how a defendant was either erroneously convicted by a jury or how a judge misunderstood this mathematical principle meant to objectively prove crimes. The only one that I can explain to you off the top of my head goes like this. So there's this old woman in San Pedro, California in the 60s who gets knocked over and someone takes her bag and runs away. And a witness says it's a white woman with a ponytail who, like, knocked you over. She ran to a yellow car that was driven by a black guy with a beard. So the cops just, like, troll around town looking for any couple that could fit that description, find an interracial couple, and they say, all right, you guys are arrested. Ugh. Bring them into a court of law. And, the prosecuting attorneys are like, man, shit, we got kind of nothing to go on because, like, there's no proof that they did this. We're going to make a mathematical argument that there's a 1 in 10 chance that a black guy would have a beard. There's a 1 in 1,000 chance that a white woman and a black guy would be dating. And there's like a 1 in 100 chance that they'd have a yellow car in the state of California. When you multiply all of that together, there's a 12 million to 1 chance that there'd be another couple that fits that same description. Therefore, it has to be these two. And it's the 60s, so the jury is just like, case closed, done, Malcolm Collins sent to prison because of mathematical probability and such.
I get the argument. That's a convincing way to do that.
Yeah.
It's a very smart, like, lawyer.
Mm-hmm. You're like, I believe it. He did it.
I mean, it's a convincing, when you tell people it's math, like, mm-hmm. and when you tell people it's statistical probability, that's something that we see as, like, math is a fact. So I think it's sinister, mm-hmm. obviously, but, and I mean, I was listening to it.
I kind of think he did it.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously have the evil in my blood, like, but unfortunately, I bought that.
So the rest of this podcast is litigating. Do you guys think he did it? No. The examples that I was giving, there's a 1 in 10 chance a black guy would have a beard or a 1 in 1,000 chance that a white woman would be dating a black man. Those are the numbers.
Even better, obviously, they arrested the black guy, even though the white woman like pushed this person over. What was his? He's just the getaway car. God.
He just drove.
Yeah. Yeah, she's hanging out on the Cracker Barrel porch, just nasty fucking boy. Rocking away, eating eggs and bread.
So even by 1968, after he had served quite a bit of time in prison, people understood that this was, in fact, bullshit. There was a Time magazine article about it in, what did I say, 1968, that was about Malcolm Collins' appeal case being seen by a different judge. So this is what the Time magazine article says, quote, Judge Sullivan concluded that Malcolm Collins, who is still in prison at the California Conservation Center, had been subjected to trial by mathematics and was entitled to a reversal of the conviction. He could be tried again, but the odds are against it.
They didn't fucking put the odds are against it.
Put the odds are against it.
Oh, yeah. You get all fucking punny with someone else's freedom. Oh.
And we love to do it.
That is when I will go to jail because I'm stabbing whoever wrote that. Yeah.
Is this Elon Musk's grandfather? Or?
God, that shit is so ass to make a pun about my freedom. Didn't it say he was still locked up?
Yeah.
Ah, what the fuck? It's not even, you gotta wait. It's too soon. I'm not even out yet.
First thing he does when he gets out, someone hands him a Time magazine article, and he's like, well, I didn't commit a crime before, but now I know
yeah,
I'm done.
Yeah, you got to.
Yeah.
Wet the pages, roll that shit up, let them dry, mm-hmm. and stab that motherfucker with them. Death by article.
So all this is to return to Cracker Barrel, Rhodes v. Cracker Barrel. The plaintiffs spent a lot of time using Bayes' theorem to establish the correlation of black applicants to hires for their desired jobs, and that was different than that of white employees. Now imagine, okay, again, I want to circle all the way back to the first question of, you think that you've been discriminated against from an employee standpoint by Cracker Barrel. How do you prove that they broke the law? This is the strategy that they decided to use, is using, what is it, Bayes' theorem. If you guys ask me to explain Bayes' theorem, I will kill myself on this podcast. But it has to do with mathematical correlations and the... Wait, hang on.
So they use this. They use the... If the math maths, like the probability of this thing?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Inverting conditional probabilities. I'll read a Wikipedia article to you about it. So this is what Wikipedia says. For example, if the risk of developing health problems is known to increase with age, Bayes' theorem allows the risk of someone of a known age to be assessed more accurately by conditioning it relative to their age, rather than assuming that the person is typical of the population as a whole.
I'm gone.
Yeah, I don't get it.
You lost me.
I don't like
four
that
words
Bay person.
Into that.
I don't like that Bay person.
Bay. Is it B-A-E? Like Bay?
B-A-Y-E-S.
Oh,
Bayes.
Bummer. Oh, you can't spell Bayes without B-S, apparently. Yes. What the fuck was all of that? You said nothing.
You came in today.
He came in mad at every single person
like
in this
that.
Podcast. Do you kind of feel like Catherine on your podcast right now?
My secret is to always be angry.
Just sits beneath the surface.
So yeah, it's like throwing my mind against the wall trying to understand it. But a large part of Rhodes v. Cracker Barrel is the plaintiffs attempting to use this theorem to establish discriminatory employment practices based on race. And I know this is part of the conversation in justice circles, but I just think it, again, bears repeating. It's crazy to need a math degree to establish that you're racially discriminated against in a large enough group to be, you know, to prove that they broke the law.
At a restaurant called Cracker Barrel.
And everything is made out of wood, and there's wagons. And
the brand is nostalgia.
You wonder, is that blood on the wood? You wonder. You don't got to wonder.
This
no
was
more.
The 90s,
yeah.
You were saying? Okay.
Oof.
Yeah.
So the plaintiffs
need dates are important. This sounds like the 90s.
Yeah. Oh, I have so much more exciting stuff to tell you about the 90s too.
Let's fucking go.
Need to satisfy four tedious requirements to be considered to be a class for a class action lawsuit. My best understanding of Rhodes v. Cracker Barrel is that it's a lot of pretrial litigation where they're trying successfully at times or unsuccessfully at other times to establish that there's enough people to be a class for a class action lawsuit. Is this making sense?
So yeah. You're trying to say, is it a big enough population for it to even be considered?
And it matters, like, they all share a trait, which is that they are all black, and that this happened to all of them because they are black. There's
but
some,
see,
like,
that's why I don't like no type of discrimination lawsuits, because you have to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt
mm-hmm.
that you were discriminated for that issue and that it was not based on merit or some other characteristic. Because if you went in there and was like, yo, it's because I'm black, and it was like, actually, we hate everybody with short, curly hair, you're like, wait, what the fuck did you just tell me?
Mm-hmm.
Because you, like, so it, as someone who has danced so many dances with HRs and things, it's a losing battle.
I am HR. Mm-hmm. I am HR. I know how to counter the soup.
Yeah.
Man. I also have danced my dances with HR, but it's always because I just find people personally annoying.
They are. HR knows that best, actually.
Yeah.
Everybody's annoying. But.
So even Kyrie, to your point, the U.S. Magistrate Judge Johnson, who was presiding over this case himself, he says, he first of all denies that they are a class. And then he says, quote, because plaintiffs challenge thousands of decisions by hundreds or perhaps thousands of different decision makers across 6 years and over 450 Cracker Barrel stores located in 41 states, it's difficult to see how the defendant has acted or refused to act on the grounds generally applicable to the class.
Which is crazy, because we've just talked about a company that has a culture.
Mm-hmm.
Everything they describe was a culture. Why can't they have a culture of discrimination?
That's so true. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, they're full of shit.
But what, you know, from like a legal perspective, when you're trying to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, it's like, well, none of these managers know
each
other.
It's really hard. It's really hard to prove legally. Like, I've worked with, I mean, I'm not HR anymore, but I was in HR consulting and recruiting consulting for many, many years. And it, I could tell. You can fucking smell it when a company, a practice, whatever, it's a culture of discrimination, a culture of racism specifically, like the way they talk, or just the little words and the little bit of like wraparound language or how they're describing a situation. But it's very difficult, especially when someone makes a mistake, right? Because then immediately you can go to merit based, then immediately you can go here, but you can feel it. You can feel the culture exists in which like, nah, it's like, it's just white women there. And if you're not white, like, you're not going to succeed. Like, and like off, well, I guess I can't go off the record. We're on the podcast, so let's move on.
I won't make you go on record. Don't you worry. So
I've had those conversations, not as an HR like employee, but like set like with people before, where I've been like, I mean, you, I don't think you should work here.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why you want to work here. Like, yeah. This, you're gonna keep, you know, you have a case here, but you're gonna keep running up against this. Like, pick a different company.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Yeah. I'm dying. I can't wait to hear off the record who it is. the magistrate judge denied their request, I guess, to be a class in 2002, but there's still a bunch more litigation and the Bush administration and $8.7 million still to come. So where does all that come in? Excuse me. Time to move on to Title II of the Civil Rights Act. That is the one that specifies all persons shall be entitled to full and equal enjoyment of goods, services, facilities, privileges, advantages, and accommodations of any place of public accommodation without discrimination on the grounds of race, color, religion, or national origin. This is for customers. The part of the Civil Rights Act that specifically protects customers from racism in public places. So, what happens when a restaurant allegedly, for example, I don't know, I'm just making this up, doesn't seat black patrons even though white patrons arrive later? Or routinely seats black people in smoking-only sections? Or allegedly uses not only code words among staff members to refer to black people, but also allegedly feeds them food from the trash? What happens there? So this is something I was saying to Christian earlier. Usually this podcast is about ways that businesses participate in crimes to make more money. You know, like, breaking environmental standards to make more money. But this
is messier.
This is just for the love of the game. Yeah. This is racism for the love of it. There's no...
For the love of the game, racism is actually kind of crazy.
I think that's for the love of the game. And also, as someone that grew up in industry in Virginia, but even outside D.C., like Northern Virginia, like, I can attest to how much of this is also just like... It's just around. It's just practiced. And you don't, like, unless you pull yourself up and out of it, you, like, you're a part of it. Like, you're complicit to a lot of this stuff by just being like, oh, this is code names. Like, this is what we do.
I'm glad you're still participating in the podcast, because Kyrie laughing over Love of the Game.
For the love of the game. It's good. I know. It is me just out here on my own.
Nobody ever says for the love of the game for anything that's positive. They only do it for shitbag shit. It's like, yeah, man. I had a baby for the love of the game. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna go do something sleazy for the love of the game.
It's for the love of the game. We should rename
no
our podcast.
Benefit. There's no money. There's no monetary benefit in this, actually. You're facing a class action lawsuit.
Yeah. Jail.
You can lose millions. And you just like, yo, fuck it, we ball. Like, yo, for racism, like
prison industrial complex for the love of the game.
For the love of the game. We want to systemically keep people out of places of employment. Yep. Not because it benefits us. For the love of the game.
I guess the point that I was getting to before I said something stupid was saying...
It was excellent.
Thank you. Let's say that a business is being busted, name of the podcast. How do you, as an employee or a consumer, prove it? How do you hold them liable for being busted? How can you get justice? That's why I invited the two people from the Justice Podcast onto my podcast today.
Thank you.
So, Rhodes v. Cracker Barrel is still barreling on in the courts. Oh, I wrote that as a joke. Ha, barreling on. However, Rhodes v. Cracker Barrel is about employment. It's now becoming more common for the New York Times at the time to be reporting on stories like this. Quote, one black employee at Cracker Barrel in Mississippi said that white waitresses would pay her $3 per table to serve their black customers instead of them. A black diner said that when he complained to a manager that whites were treated better, he was told he should go to Burger King instead. So the New York Times starts running this sort of treatment of customers, starts getting more and more publicity. That white waitresses that would pay their coworker $3 to serve a table so that they don't have to serve black people is insane. Like, that's beyond love of the game. You are now losing monetarily because of your racism. And that's on you.
For the love of the game. See, that's what I'm telling you. Like, for the love of the game is never, it's never someone that's a winner. You're a loser. And you're going to go out losing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're willing to go down with the sinking ship.
There are levels. There's such a level. I don't even want to, like, qualify this as, like, an okay thing, but levels and, like, layers of racism. Like, there's one I said where it's, like, kind of hard to be like, all right, like, is there something, like, shady going on here? Mm-hmm. And then there's, I don't serve black people.
Yeah.
And there's Leonardo. I hate black people.
Oh, like, my then God, there's, that fucking lady.
Yeah, we'll come back to it, but I'm sure.
Next company you should look into. I don't know if you did, but I gotta look. Denny's.
The way you just foreshadowed exactly what's about to happen on this podcast, I'm going to read you the next paragraph.
Okay.
I'm not the Historical Context Bureau, but for historical context, a few years prior to this, in 1993, Shoney's settled a $105 million racial discrimination case for its employees, precipitated by two white employees getting fired for refusing to discriminate against black people. Like, that's how the Shoney's one started. In 1994, Denny's...
Ha-ha! I fucking know it. It makes my skin do stuff.
...was ordered to pay $54 million worth of settlements to black customers. In one case at Denny's, I don't know if you know about this one, six black Secret Service agents assigned to President Bill Clinton's detail were refused a table at Denny's in Annapolis, Maryland, while their white Secret Service colleagues were seated and served.
I'm protecting you.
It's so much easier, though, as the consumer and customer to, like, name that as an employee, which I'm sure you'll get to. Mm-hmm. Much more difficult.
I need to harp on this six service agents thing. Of
That's crazy.
You have probably one of the most important jobs in the country, right? Like, it's to use your body to protect the president of the United States. Walking into a Denny's and just, like, some fucking teenage host with a cigarette is just like, I'm going to seat the white people first and refuse you guys because I'm looking at you and I don't like the way you look. Like, that is the craziest shit ever. And to walk out and be like, Bill, something bad happened at that Denny's.
I think that's just a testimony because I think you said 93 for that Denny's one?
Yeah, 94.
I was only 3 years old. But that knowledge is passed down in the community of which companies are going to treat us well. And for me to hear that in different states and in different generations, and for it to even be prevalent when I am going on prom and we're like, yo, where you going? We're going to we're not going to Denny's.
Mm-hmm.
It just speaks to the type of culture that is even in this country and how hard it is to prove racism, but how people cope by just trying to gather and go to other places. You even have, like, a boycott today of companies who historically have done wrong in so many ways to the black and brown communities around the country. So it's just wild that it's just a reoccurring thing.
Yeah, and that you can't prove it in a court of law, but you know generations of people who won't go to Denny's because they know they're going to get racism at Denny's. Like, that's great. That, you know, that doesn't come out of nowhere. All of what right-wingers say about discrimination lawsuits is like, oh, it's going to be frivolous, it's going to be over nothing, or it's going to be whatever. It's like, no, there's so many people who can prove that this is happening, but just not in a court of law under these specific standards. So, that's nuts.
White people stay white people.
It's crazy that you spidey sensed the Denny's coming out the next paragraph.
It's crazy.
So, the Denny's thing happens in 1994, and it was under the tenure of Deval Patrick, who was Bill Clinton's assistant attorney general for civil rights. But this is Cracker Barrel. This is under George Bush. So who was the assistant attorney general for civil rights under George Bush? Great question. It is Alexander Acosta. I'm going to read you two sentences from Wikipedia about this guy. In 2008, U.S. Attorney Acosta approved a federal non-prosecution agreement with Jeffrey Epstein. That secret agreement, conducted without consulting the victims, was later ruled illegal by a federal judge for violating the Crime Victim Rights Act.
Well,
do you want to know what he's that Epstein homie had to step in and say, hey, this is racist, y'all?
You want to know one more thing about him? He is our current Secretary of Labor.
With Trump?
Mm-hmm.
This motherfucker stay around no matter who in office?
Yeah.
And he worked with Epstein? Oh, boy. Hey.
So...
Hey,
I know I will see you guys in hell. Again, I just hope it's like a layer above.
What Dante said is a few layers, so oh fuck.
I hope we're in circle two and then
Mm-hmm. We might have to dig a new circle for these motherfuckers. There's no way they should be around humans. This is crazy.
Yeah. If you, I don't know, like, you know how there's people that know every single detail of Jeffrey Epstein's life because of, like, the conspiracy or whatever? So I don't know much about it. Kyrie's like, guilty!
Yeah, Kyrie reads all the documents.
But from what I understand is, it's sort of like, we could have got Epstein a lot earlier if in 2008 he didn't sign this non-prosecution agreement with him and essentially, like, let him off the hook.
Yeah, him and Eric Adams.
Right. Which is like, what a slay.
Slay queen.
Diversity slay.
Diversity slay.
DEI slay.
Is what DEI is going to be. So instead of DEI, we're going to use diversity slay.
Diversity slay. Excellent.
I love being alive. It feels amazing.
Who would be appointed? Who would Trump appoint over diversity slay?
I'm sort of convinced we're all lost now, like on Lost. Like we've been dead.
It is like a fog or a mist that's taking over America, and we're just all in the fucking dreamland.
Anyway.
The United States conducted a federal investigation, in part precipitated by the events of Rhodes v. Cracker Barrel. What kind of came of the United States investigation kind of is what people who hate DEI make fun of about DEI. So this is a distinctly right-wing administration, right-wing DOJ, ruling over Cracker Barrel. They put forth a consent order. It doesn't legally hold Cracker Barrel criminally or legally liable for violating Titles 2 or 7, but it does mandate them to adopt a bunch of woke policies that will surely prohibit discrimination from ever happening again. No crime, no time, no fine. So that is what comes of the federal investigation of Cracker Barrel. It's just like, you need to have policies prohibiting discrimination.
Yeah, and that is where the right like stands their ground, and I do think has some ground on the way DEI is like enforced right now, and the thing like the wokeness, or it's like it doesn't actually address the issue of racism. Like it's just don't say this, don't do that, but like there's a degree of that is useful, but it doesn't actually like address anything.
But that's all that comes of the, like I said, the federal investigation. Separately, though, Rhodes v. Cracker Barrel is settled out of court. It is only through private litigation that lawyers are able to settle with Cracker Barrel for $8.7 million spread to, I think, 52 plaintiffs in that specific case. So that's all that anybody gets out of Cracker Barrel's injustice, monetarily speaking.
Is how much?
Is $8.7 million.
Wait, split amongst all those
people? How many people?
I think it's among 52 people. But also, for reference, Shoney's was $105 million and Denny's was $54
million.
Okay. So $8.7 million. I mean, for those 52 people, that's kind of cool. But
for it to be 52 is kind of cool, but also nobody actually got reprimanded. And I think that, like, although they don't actually say it, I think that's just a big problem for me as well. Because when you talk about the DEI stuff, it's how it's implemented. But also, nobody is ever actually held liable for the fucked up things that they do. It's sickening. And it also makes...
Because you can pay out.
Yeah, you can pay out. Nobody goes to jail. Nobody actually... You get not even a real slap on the wrist. This is just a finger wag, for real, in comparison to what other corporations are paying or what they face.
Yeah, and every news article...
I think that's because we live here, though. Again, comes sort of back to capitalism, too, because, like, if I'm discriminated against and it's like, should this person go to jail or do I get $2 million, I'd probably take the $2 million.
And see, that's what I'm saying.
I want that person to go to jail. We don't believe in jail, but, you know, I would want them to face a consequence, but... In the end of the day, we're such like we selfish Americans that I think it's like, okay, well, I will take whatever I can get out of this.
For sure, but in terms of that, like it creates a vacuum of justice. You're not really getting justice, but you're just getting the bare minimum. For example, when the plane flipped over and people's like, "Yo, give me $30,000 for a plane flipping over while you're inside of it."
You can catch me not accepting that.
But see, that's what I'm saying. That it creates this idea of like, "Hey, you better get something while you can, or you don't get nothing." Because nobody's gonna go to jail for this. Yeah. It's like, wait,
I'm not saying it's right, by the way. Like, we're still 72.9 cents, whatever, 42 cents on the dollar, and we're like, but it's we're there.
It's just so fucked up that people. 52, the $8 million split by 52 after taxes.
Yeah, but, the lawyer's fee, right.
Yeah, like,
you're not really getting
not really getting nothing. And it was just by the grace of God that was the 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
So the economy wasn't as shit as it is now, but people didn't What's your respect worth? You know what I mean? Like what's your humanization worth? Like
yeah,
like
I wish all of ours didn't have a price, but it's I think we all have one.
And
$3 if, for me.
But my whole
I think
thing,
as a realist, like I think I have one.
But can we get that though, and not $30,000? Can we get that and not $8 million spit by 52? Because yeah. There's one thing to say, hey, there's a price. There's another thing to say, okay, that's your price. I don't care. I didn't even see you as human. So why the fuck yeah. are you telling me
it's
your price?
It's fucked up. It's fucked up actually because you only really like this is a complete tangent. So
I drink
could
a THC
it.
Beverage and I usually steamroll people, but okay, now I'm high enough where okay. I'm just watching you.
I was gonna say I could save this for Beyond Bars, but it's my biggest beef with these fucking dickless billionaires right now is you have enough money to have principles. Mm-hmm. You don't need to take the settlement. You don't like Tim Cook can talk back. Like mm-hmm. do something about it. Like the unfortunate scenario here is like that actually that amount of money might have changed some people's lives. Mm-hmm. So it's like yeah, we'll take it as opposed to true like justice.
Every article is also the first to mention that with this $8.7 million settlement or whatever, their stocks are fine. It's a publicly traded company. It's like that big, Cracker yeah. Barrel, which is
of course
insane.
They had a better lawyer to be like, this is yeah. actually not going to give you a hit at all.
Yeah. So their stocks were
probably
fine.
Sealed it some freak shit so that it didn't get out right away, which is probably why you didn't get a lot of articles on it.
Mm-hmm. And it's like... So then what comes next, right? They have this big discrimination lawsuit that doesn't legally prove either way if they, you know, violated federal civil rights law. So what comes next for Cracker Barrel? Is racism solved? Did we do it?
Is racism solved?
Yeah, that's what I got.
So unfortunately, no. You know how TikToks are like news now? Like there's a whole news article that's just like, someone posted on TikTok this. So I feel bad that this is where that I'm about to talk about a fucking TikTok, but there's a worker. This is the first thing I Googled when I was in the car with Christian on tour about Cracker Barrel. A worker who still works at a Cracker Barrel who says that they use code words for black diners, and this one specifies that they use the one Canadians.
You guys I've heard that.
You've heard of Canadians?
Yep. Worked in the service industry in the South. Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Did you used to participate in calling them comedians?
Yeah, Canadians. Toronto.
So I
with Drake.
I have my little research of how far back I can date Canadians, but do you know where it came from or why people say it? Because I don't know why.
I don't know why Canadians, actually.
Mm. If it started in the South, it makes sense because black people was always trying to go to Canada for freedom at one point.
Mm.
So I could see that.
I don't know.
No one else has a theory of where Canadians came from. The earliest that I could find someone on the internet using that is 2003, Houston, Texas.
Let me Urban Dictionary.
There was an assistant attorney, assistant district attorney of Houston, Mike Trent. He was frustrated over how a jury case was going or something, so he fires off an email that says, quote, he overcame a subversively good defense by Matt Hennessy that had some Canadians on the jury feeling sorry for the defendant and forced them to do the right thing. So the context of that, I guess, is that, like, Canadians are supposed to refer to black jurors who, I guess, are swayed by guilt into doing the right thing. But, yeah, that's 2003. It's as early as I could find Canadians being used. Urban Dictionary giving you anything?
Or on an essay on racism in restaurants, so I think I might get someone here. But, yeah, that was I heard that.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've asked, like, five different people about this, and nobody's
I think,
told
again,
me.
I think it's really hard for white people to own, like, I'm complicit in that I heard that, and I wasn't like, sue this restaurant.
So that's basically the state of where Cracker Barrel is now.
I can't believe they still operate.
Because you'll see like endless Reddit threads or TikToks or whatever, yeah. comments even on news articles about said TikToks being like, I went to a Cracker Barrel and here's exactly what happened to me. So unsurprisingly, I guess, the corporate culture was not changed overnight by a few DEI policies.
Maybe that's like the attraction. People like, yo, you heard of the escape room. Come to the racist room where it's like, yeah, we don't honor anything.
That's a new kind of thrilling dining experience.
A thrilling dining experience?
You know, like one of those immersive things where they like light your chicken on fire or whatever under a
immersed
plate.
Immersed in racism? Are you tired of being treated like a human while you pay top dollar for food? Yeah. Come pay top dollar for shit food and get treated like shit.
Well, it's coming to Logan Square.
Oh, because where else would it be? They have a new branch in the Gold Coast.
This would have been my guess, too, is this person who's, like, really deep in their own essay about this. But he's likening it to because Canadian is very appropriate because racism in the U.S. seems equivalent of nationalism in other countries. Like, racists treat black people like outsiders. That would have been my bet on it, too. It's like, you're not American. Like, you're not like us.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been my guess. I never heard it, like, equated to that, because then that again would have been like another level of demonic, right? Like,
yeah.
I'd never had it explained to me, because then I would be like, hey, I'm being racist. I just like heard it used, right?
Yeah. Huh.
But that would be my guess.
If you had to open that restaurant of a themed dining experience of racism, what would you call it?
A themed dining experience of
I would call
racism.
It Cracker Barrel 2 Electric Boogaloo. I've been reading a book.
The White House.
The White House.
If it's a subsidiary of Cracker Barrel, I just call it the Hard R Barrel.
The Hard R.
It's Cracker Barrel, but it's in the spelling.
Two big old R's. You gotta go Hard R. You gotta get the people what they want.
I think I call it Canadians.
We only serve Canadian bacon.
Canadians, yeah.
Tons of maple syrup.
And like Comic Sans font too, so you know it's fun.
So I've been reading a book that I'll probably feature on an upcoming episode of the podcast. Actually, the book is sitting right here. It is Too Big to Jail, How Prosecutors Compromise with Corporations. And this is about Enron and KPMG. But there's a quote from this book about like white collar crime that I do feel applies here, even though like service industry isn't necessarily white collar crime. But he writes, quote, "One purpose of an organization, particularly a large one, is to allow work to be specialized and divided among employees. That may make the work more efficient, but it also makes it harder to blame individuals if something goes wrong. Criminologists who study corporate fraud suggest it is usually a team sport and the product of groupthink or collusion among groups of employees. Scholars suggest that managers can be socialized together with numbing effects on their ability to break ranks and question orders." So when like racism is so entrenched in social networks and stuff, it's hard to like not only root out the institutions like Cracker Barrel, but like prove it's even happening in the first place.
Yeah.
I just thought I couldn't believe how relevant that was over Cracker Barrel when I was like reading it in the book. So I just wanted to mention it.
That
I
is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So but like it's crazy, but it's not real, because we look at Chick-fil-A, like we know it comes from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like that's just another cop-out for big business, big corporations. America's a corporation. Like, it's all bullshit.
Mm-hmm. But that's all I had written down on the podcast. So how are you guys feeling about Cracker Barrel?
I had decided earlier, I had dropped in our group chat that Cracker Barrel would probably wind up being my new nickname on our podcast. But I have since decided to give myself more credit. And I've decided that Cracker Barrel is now what I will call Tesla trucks.
You're not wrong.